Hey everyone, this is Jordan.
And I'm Maya.
And today we're going to be talking about the impact of Eric's sexual abuse.
So this is part one of a two-part episode. In this episode, we'll be covering Eric's sexual abuse from ages 6 to 15. And when you're done with this one, check out our next episode for our analysis of Eric's sexual abuse from ages 15 to 18, as well as how that led to the shootings. All right, so like our last episode, this is a pretty intense subject matter. We'll be discussing child sexual abuse, including violent and disturbing sexual acts, child-on-child sexual abuse, incest, death threats, suicidal thoughts, and discussing child pornography and pornographic material. So, trigger warning for all of those things.
Mr. Menendez, you've heard the testimony of your brother that you and he killed your parents on August 20th, 1989. Did you not?
Yes, we did.
And what do you believe was the originating cause of you and your brother ultimately winding up shooting your parents?
Me telling.
You telling what?
Me telling Lyle that,
You telling Lyle what? Was it you telling Lyle about something that was happening?
My dad.
Okay.
My dad.
Verona, can I ask a leading question?
If you don't ask.
My dad.
Wait 1 second, Mr. Menendez. Okay, let me ask.
No, he was in the process of answering, so there's no need to ask him.
Can you answer the question?
Yes.
Okay, was you telling Lyle what?
That my dad had been molesting me.
And did you want something from your brother? Is that why you told him?
I wanted to stop.
Were you seeking help from your brother?
Yes.
And when you were in Israel in 1990, did you feel that seeking help from your brother was why your brother was in jail?
Yes.
Okay, so where are we starting off then? What age did Eric's sexual abuse begin?
So, Eric's sexual abuse began at age 6. And in the beginning, it was very similar to Lyle's sexual abuse of this grooming process. Jose was being very nice to Eric and having this like bonding experience. And he talked about the Greeks and the Roman soldiers and eventually led into more sexual contact with touching each other and things like that.
Except in Eric's case, it continued past the age that Lyle's sexual abuse actually stopped. Yeah. You should also probably say that, like, in the grooming process, this is just the next step. There were the massages by the pool that everyone saw. So that when the other massages at home started to happen, it was sort of just like an extension of that. It was to normalize the behavior.
Yeah, and it also like started with the massages with their clothes on and then moved to taking their clothes off and then moved to the genital area. So again, more of that grooming of slowly normalizing the eventual sexual component. Eric's view on the massages, as he referred to them, was very different from Lyle, because Lyle was the golden child and got all of Jose's attention. And so Eric got none of Jose's attention. So when the grooming and sexual abuse started, Eric didn't want it to stop because it was like the only time that Jose showed him positive attention.
And how did your father behave with you when these massages were taking place? How did he treat you?
He was great. He was kind. He never said anything negative to me. He told me that I was part of the family and that I belonged, and that this was good.
And did he tell you anything about the activity he was engaged in with you? Did he tell you anything about the massages? What were they?
They were to relieve the stress and the tension. And that's what they were there for.
Were they something that you were supposed to tell everybody about?
No, of course not. No.
Why do you say of course not?
Well, he explained to me very clearly that this was something between us, and what he said is that this would stop if I told anyone, and that I wouldn't be alone with him anymore, and that I wouldn't get this attention.
So he told you to keep it a secret?
Yes.
And did you want it to stop?
No.
Why?
Because it was the only time I got to spend alone with my dad. It was the only time I got to be with him, and for him to be nice and caring with me.
So did that make you feel better about your relationship with your father, these massages that were happening?
Made me feel like...
Overall, your answer.
Made me feel like I had a relationship with my dad.
Yeah, I think that's something that Dr. Anne Burgess has talked about a lot. Like, for children, there's... In these sort of situations, there are... I don't want to say positive aspects to the abuse, but especially in Eric's case, he saw it as how his father showed him love and attention, because in every other aspect of Eric's life as a child and adolescent, he was dismissed, neglected, and abused in other ways.
I think he even says, like, that was the first time I felt like my dad loved me.
Is it according to... I mean, Eric testifies that mouth massages began at age 7, right?
Yeah, he said... He talked about the first time where he gagged. That was at the North Mill house. So he was 7 when they lived there.
Now, at some point, Mr. Menendez, did the massages that you were doing on your father change?
Yes.
And was there an occasion when he asked you to do something new?
Yes.
And what was it? Would you tell us what it was that he asked you to do?
He took off his underwear, and he had never done that before. And... he had me massage the front of him. And
yes.
So I started, I massaged his calves and his thighs, and I skipped over his genitals because I didn't want to touch him. And I just went to his stomach, and he said no.
And did you understand what he meant?
Yes.
And what happened next?
I just touched him.
And did anything else happen after you touched his genitals?
Yes.
And did anything else happen?
Yes.
What happened?
I started to rub him, and then he told me to massage him with his mouth.
With his mouth?
With my mouth.
And do you remember whether or not at that point your father had an erection?
Yes, he did.
And how did you feel about his asking you to massage him with your mouth.
I didn't want to do that because I had never seen him like that, and I didn't want to do it.
Did it frighten you?
Yes.
Did you therefore refuse, and that mm-hmm. ended things?
No, I wanted this time to go on with my dad. I didn't want it to end, so I was going to do what he said. I just didn't want to do all things.
Did you do what he asked you to do during that session?
Yes.
And what happened when you tried to do that?
I gagged. He put his hand on my head, and he shoved my head on his penis, and it went in too far, and I tried to push away, and he just did it. He tried to be calm about it and be nice, but it was too big, and it was too far inside me, and I just pulled away.
Now, did he get angry or upset with you on that occasion?
No.
So it was still nice?
No, I mean it was nice to be with him. I didn't like what I was doing, but I figured that it was just me, and then I would get used to it. I didn't think my dad was doing something wrong.
Did you think anything that had happened up till then was wrong or unnatural or abnormal or weird or anything like that?
No.
Yeah, Eric talks about this in Eric Tells All as well, and he says that essentially, like, after he gagged, his father was nice to him and basically said, like, you did good, and like, it's like it was a good thing. So it's, again, sort of like enforcing to Eric that this is like their bonding time, and his father was showing him attention and being nice to him. And even like when his father did something that scared him, his father sort of like reinforced to him that, no, this is fine, this is good.
So from the ages of 6 to 10, Eric's sexual abuse by his father was primarily what he called mouth massages, where Jose would put his mouth on Eric's penis and then have Eric do the same thing to him. And that lasted for most of that time period.
The other aspect to this early stage of Eric's sexual abuse is that Jose would use tools on Eric. And what Eric is actually referring to is that Jose was using these tools to prepare Eric to have anal sex.
Yeah, that started... That was sort of towards the end of the 6 to 10 period.
Yeah. I mean, this plays into the whole grooming aspect as well, though, because that's what molesters do, is that they will try and... You can't go to one extreme straight away. You have to start smaller to make the action seem more normal to the child. And you have to sort of work up to the things that are more extreme and severe. And that's what Jose was doing here.
Oh, God.
Yeah, even just talking about this just makes me nauseous, man.
Yeah. We should probably mention Lyle's abuse of Eric, too. So that was before Eric's abuse by Jose started.
Eric would have been 5, right?
I think so. 5 or 4. I mean, depending on when it started. So, like we talked about in our previous video about Lyle, during the time that Lyle was being sexually abused by Jose, Lyle would take Eric out into the woods and play with Eric in the same way that Jose had played with him, using like a toothbrush, I think. Eric talks about this in his testimony.
You heard your brother testify that when you were quite small, probably around 5, he did something to you.
Yes.
And how did you feel about him when those things were going on?
I didn't like him. I didn't like him at all. I didn't want those things to happen.
Did your attitude about those things and him change?
Eventually.
And what changed them? Do you understand what I'm talking about?
Yes. I mean, I resented Lyle for a few years because of the things that he had done to me. And once the things with Dad started to happen, then I felt real guilty about that.
You felt guilty about what?
Resenting Lyle.
Why did you feel guilty about resenting Lyle when, I take it you mean the sexual things with your father were happening?
Yes.
So why did you feel guilty about resenting Lyle?
Because I thought that this was supposed to be natural when my dad explained to me why it was supposed to be, and Lyle didn't explain to me any of those things, and so I thought that it wasn't.
You thought it wasn't when Lyle did it, and then when your father explained...
I realized that it was, and I felt guilty for resenting Lyle.
Okay.
I found it very compelling that how he put that in his testimony. Like, it made a lot of sense that that's how he would perceive it and that his opinion about Lyle's abuse of him would change.
You mean how he admitted that he had sort of grown to sort of resent Lyle because of the abuse, but then Jose sort of recontextualizing it got him to change his opinion about it, and then he felt badly about it?
Yeah, I just feel like from the perspective of a six-year-old child, that makes a lot of sense. And obviously, from the outsider perspective, it's horrible. All of it is horrible. But like for Eric as a six-year-old, it would be like, I guess like what Lyle did to me was supposed to happen because my dad has told me that it's supposed to happen. And now it's like, I mean, it's extremely confusing, but it does make sense if you were thinking about it as like a six-year-old's brain.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think just the fact that they admitted to that happening in the first place does a lot for their credibility. I mean, one, I don't think it really makes sense to lie about something like that, to further embarrass themselves on national TV by admitting to something like that if it wasn't true. Their testimony about the abuse outside of that is powerful enough in itself. So it's a bit like, why would they need to add that in if it was false, you know?
Yeah.
That's how I see it anyway. So, quick side note. Dr. Vickery was Eric's treating psychiatrist while he was in jail. And essentially there was a whole controversy, I guess you could say, about how Dr. Vickery had altered his notes, and there's two different stories about what happened, but we'll go into that another time. But essentially, in these redacted notes, there is one note which could be related to this time period, which is like the early stages of Eric's molestation, where Eric indicated that at the age of 5, he was molested by a babysitter. And there are some different theories about what that could mean, but what do you think?
First of all, I think that that is a reference to Lyle molesting him. He made that comment before he revealed to Vickery the sexual abuse by his father. And I think that it's sort of Eric testing the waters of sort of revealing that he was molested, but then not revealing who it was. I think Dr. Conti talked about this when he talked about Lyle revealing his abuse, that victims will like slowly reveal a little bit of something bad that happened to them and then see how the therapist react and then determine whether they want to reveal more. So that's kind of how I view this comment.
Yeah, I feel like you have to, well, I mean, with a lot of things in the redacted notes, I feel like you have to view it through the lens of what is typical in, like, therapy situations and how patients will typically, like you said, test the waters and will, like, hint at things. And it's sort of the therapist's job to uncover the truth. So I think it's definitely possible that Eric was referring to Lyle abusing him. I've also seen other people say that this could have been a genuine incident that did happen, because Eric, I think someone has explained this before, that Eric is like a, his personality type is someone who is like susceptible to being like the victim. I think Vickery's talked about this in his testimony. I think that might be pushing it a little bit too far. I don't necessarily think that that Eric actually was, I don't know. It's hard to talk about because we don't really know a lot of the context behind these notes, but it's still interesting to think about nonetheless.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the timing lines up too well. And it makes sense that he would say that it was a babysitter when in reality, like, essentially the babysitter was Lyle.
Yeah. I do think it makes sense in that context. Well, this is really just making me really wish that we had more of an explanation for these notes.
Yeah, it's difficult because they were just a line taken out, so you don't know what was going on in the conversation before or after.
I mean, I guess what corroboration for the sexual abuse in this stage of his life is that his cousin, Alan Anderson, testified that before the age of 6, when he went to visit the family, whenever he saw Eric was like very outgoing, very happy child, always interested in other people. And then suddenly after the age of 6, he noticed that Eric was extremely introverted, was shy, almost scared of people, didn't really want to get near anyone. And usually in cases where there is a severe form of abuse happening to a child, you see those big personality changes.
It's kind of interesting because the way that Eric describes the ages 6 to 10, these early stages of the sexual abuse, when Jose was nice to him, it kind of seems like, I feel like it's just so indicative of like the psychological impact of sexual abuse that even though Eric saw this at normal, it still changed his behavior, like noticeably changed it, even though it wasn't, as we'll get to like in the later stages, the violent component or Eric being afraid of his father during this time, like it still had an impact on his behavior in a noticeable way. There's a couple other corroborative things. Of course, the naked pictures of the brothers.
Oh,
which we talked about a lot in our video that we did about Lyle. But of course, there's the picture of Eric and that one.
Mr. Menendez, do you recall seeing a photograph in this series of your body naked?
Yes.
Do you remember that photograph being taken?
I remember a lot of photographs being taken. I don't remember that specific one.
the types of photographs, well, your parents both took a lot of photographs of you and your brother, is that right?
Yes.
Do you remember naked photographs being taken?
Yes.
And who would take the naked ones?
My dad.
It's just too corroborative for me.
I think it combined with everything else that we're going to talk about is makes it too corroborative. Yeah. It lines up with the rest of the evidence too well.
You pointed this out in the last one that he's like holding open his robe, right?
Yeah, he's like his robe is like hanging off like the side of him. And when I, like, to me, that looks like someone has, like, told him to do that. And he also has an erection in the photo as well, which is also very suspicious.
Didn't the prosecutors try to make the argument that because it was, like, of the angle of the picture, it was taken by Lyle or something, right?
Yeah, they tried to argue that the brothers took the photos of each other because of, like, the angle of the photo or something like that. If Jose did take the photos, he would have to have knelt down, because if he took the picture standing up, it would obviously have Eric's face in it. And
that's true.
An abuser is obviously not going to want to have that out in the open. What do you think about the theory that there were other photos, but they were either thrown away or, like, sold?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there were other pictures. The theory of the photos being sold, obviously, like, someone who's capable of taking a picture like that is capable of selling it. But there's not any serious evidence that that took place. I don't know. I definitely think other photos existed.
Well, the photos were found in an envelope that, like, the writing on it was from Kitty. So, I don't know. Do you think perhaps, like, they did throw away all those photos, but for whatever reason, Kitty just decided to keep those specific ones for some weird reason?
I mean, maybe she didn't, like, saw the envelope and didn't realize that those were in there.
Oh, like she forgot they were in there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I guess that's possible.
Because they were mixed in, maybe she was like, oh, I'll keep Eric's 6th birthday photos.
And she didn't realize that the others were in there.
Yeah. So something we didn't talk about in our Lyle video was that Jose also would bring home, like, pornographic films and show them to the brothers. I don't know if Eric testified about this. I think Lyle did. And there was also a neighbor from when they lived in Pennington.
Oh, that was Alicia Hertz, right?
Yeah. Was it how old was Eric when they lived in Pennington? Because I think Lyle said in his testimony that he remembers the pornography mostly from Pennington. So Eric was ages 8 to 14 when they lived in Pennington, New Jersey. So most of his childhood. So some point during that time, Jose, like, showed a film that contained child pornography to some of the neighbors, including Alicia Hertz.
Do you remember the dinner party Jose Menendez started showing you child pornography? That's what really surprised me.
Well, after dinner, that was their entertainment.
You described it as racy pornographic video of children engaged in sex acts.
And then the neighbors expressed that, like, they found the film disturbing, and then Jose, like, laughed and said that he showed it to his kids. As for corroboration, there was also the injury to Eric's throat at age 7 that was consistent with oral copulation.
I mean, it should be said that, like, that is an injury that is also consistent with a child having a popsicle stick in their mouth and falling over or something like that.
What I got from the testimony of the doctor who was evaluating the records, because it was like an injury to a very specific part of the throat, and the way he put it was like a child with a popsicle stick in their mouth falling on the popsicle stick, because it was only, there was no injury to the rest of the mouth. It was just the back of the throat. So, like, if it wasn't sexual abuse that caused the injury, it would have to have been something else in the mouth that only injured the back. It's corroborative. It's not proof of anything.
It should also be said that, like, whichever parent took him to the doctors failed to relay what actually caused the injury anyway.
Yeah.
So, like, for me, it's a bit like, if it was completely innocent or like an accident, why didn't they tell?
Why wasn't it noted?
Yeah, why wasn't it noted?
I think there's plenty of support for Eric's claims that he was sexually abused during this period of time from ages 6 to 10. I mean, I think the photos are practically irrefutable, but then you've got these other components of his behavioral changes, this injury that's possibly connected, and then the presence of pornographic films that were reported to have been shown to the brothers. It all lines up.
Yeah, it's corroboration. Okay, should we move on to the next stage, ages 11 to 15?
Yeah.
At age 11, there was an incident which was incredibly significant to Eric in terms of what the sexual abuse actually was to him and how he thought about it. So it was the first time that his father was violent with him during the sexual abuse. And I know that in Eric Tells All, he says that was the first time he really felt like true fear during it, because he realized that, like, his father only saw him as an object, basically. I think Anne Burgess and Tyler refer to this as well, is that the child realizes that they're only seen as an object by the abuser.
And I think kind of along with that, like, this is when Eric started to realize that this wasn't normal.
So the way it's described in Leslie's book, I'll read it here. According to my notes, the worst scene, as Eric recalls it, takes place in the winter right after his 11th birthday. He's pretty sure of the time because the trees in New Jersey, where the family lived before they moved to California, are bare. It's the late afternoon, but not fully dark. Lyle is somewhere, but Eric doesn't know where. Maybe outside on the tennis court, but definitely not in his room. His mother is home. Eric knows that because he hears his parents fighting, yelling, and then his father pounding up the stairs, steps coming down the hall rapidly. Father bursts through the door and opens it so forcefully that it slams into the wall.
He came into the room and he told me to kneel down on my bed. Okay. And I did, and he came over to my bed and threw me off the bed and told me to kneel on the floor.
And you made a sweeping motion with your right hand when you said he...
Yeah, he just threw me with his hand on my arm here.
He took you back on the arm and threw you off the bed?
Yes.
And said?
And said for me to get on my knees on the floor. And I was real confused because he had just said to get on my knees on the bed. And so I didn't know what to do.
What did you think was going to happen when he told you to get on your knees on the bed?
I thought it might have been some sort of sex.
Why did you think that?
Because when he told me to get on my knees in the bed, usually what would happen would be for me to have some sort of sex with him, but it was strange because he didn't tell me to take off my clothes. He didn't help me take off my clothes like he used to do. He just told me to kneel on the bed, and I didn't understand why. I didn't know what was going on.
So did you then kneel on the floor as he ordered you to do?
Yes.
And was he dressed?
Yes.
Okay, what happened? First of all, did it hurt when he threw you off the bed?
I hit my head against the wall, but I wasn't thinking about that.
Okay, what happened now?
He was unbuckling his pants, and he pulled out his penis. And in some way, either by his hand on my head or by telling me, he told me he wanted me to massage his penis with my mouth.
And did you do that?
Yes.
And you had done that before, hadn't you?
Yes.
Had you ever done it being on the floor on your knees?
No.
Mr. Menendez, is this the beginning of what you came to call knees?
Yes.
And did you call it that because of the position you had to take?
Yes.
And what happened ultimately in this episode?
I had to give him a massage on my knees until he started to have an orgasm.
And had he ever done that before while you were giving him a mouth massage?
No. He had done it, not in my mouth. I was ready to pull away like I'd always done, and then he just came on a towel or a sheet, whatever he had with him. So I was about to pull away because I didn't know what was going to happen because we weren't on a bed and I was just kneeling down. And he said, no, swallow. And he held my head to him.
And therefore, did he ejaculate in the mouth?
Yes.
And did you swallow?
Partly.
And did this upset you?
Yes.
And how did you demonstrate being upset?
I was crying.
And how did he react to your crying?
He pushed me away afterwards.
And did he say or do anything to you afterwards?
Yes.
What did he say or do?
He said, why can't you just be like your brother?
What did that mean?
I thought he just meant, why do I have to cry all the time?
And was he, what was his tone of voice when he said this?
He was rough and he was angry.
Did he at any time at this point use the word embarrassment?
I don't remember him using the word embarrassment. He just started talking about how I wasn't a Menendez and how I was never going to be good enough to be a Menendez and how he was ashamed to have me as his son, and then he said I'd get used to it and left.
And what were you doing while he was saying these things to you?
I was just sitting on the floor crying.
And after he left, what happened?
I went to the door to see if he was still around the corner, and I just went to the bathroom and threw up.
And after this incident, Jose was no longer nice to Eric, and he wouldn't stop if it was hurting him or if Eric was uncomfortable.
I mean, that's the incident that Eric sees as, like, the most significant, because that was when he first truly realized that it wasn't anything like loving, it wasn't anything about his father caring about him. It was just another thing that he had to put up with.
So Eric says that this is the first incident of what he would eventually call knees, which is where he would be kneeling on the floor and give his father oral sex. The first time that Jose had anal sex with Eric was when Eric was 12. So there was a slat on Eric's bed that came off, and Jose wedged it under the door so that Eric's bedroom door couldn't be open.
There is corroboration for this in that during Andy's testimony, he remembers the slat under Eric's bed because him and Eric would always use it to, like, keep the door closed when they were, like, playing in their room.
They told me to bend over the footboard.
This bed had a footboard and a headboard?
Yes.
And did you know what it meant to be told to bend over the footboard?
Yes.
He had had you do that before?
Yes. That's when he tried to have sex with me, but wasn't able to.
And did your father put anything on you or ask you to put anything on you?
This time, he just did it himself. Usually, he told me to.
What was it that was put on you?
He had a Vaseline jar.
And in the past, when he had tried to do this, he had had you put the Vaseline on?
Yes, he put some on himself, and he had me put them on myself.
On this occasion, he put it on you?
Yes.
And what happened?
And he lined himself up, and he started going into me like he had always done, but this time he was going in too far. And I said, "Dad, please stop." And I said, "Dad, you're hurting me." And he would just kept on going further. At one point, I just started screaming, and I started saying, "Stop, it hurts, it hurts." And he just went all the way in.
And did that hurt?
Yes.
And how did you react to that pain?
I just sort of died off. I didn't, I stopped screaming, and I just sort of left myself.
You left yourself?
I just pretended that it wasn't happening. I pretended that the pain wasn't happening, and I just went away in my mind. It was too painful.
Which is dissociating, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you would call that dissociating when it's, like, in the middle of the traumatic incident. Is there, like, another term for that?
I am not sure.
But that's basically what it was.
When it was over, did you cry?
I was crying during it.
Okay. And after it was over, were you still crying?
Yes.
And did your father say anything to you at that time?
Yeah, he had a towel on the bed, and he put the towel on the bed, and he had me sit on the towel so that I wouldn't get anything on the bed. And he said very calmly and looked at me and told me to look him in the eyes, and he said, "Next time you ever scream or yell, I'm going to beat you so bad you'll never be able to scream or yell again."
Do you, did it occur to you, did something occur to you about this episode concerning why he had gone ahead when you were in pain?
Yes.
What was that?
It was because when I had screamed or yelled or cried out before, he had told me that if I ever did that, he was going to go all the way inside of me.
That was on a previous occasion when he was trying to do this?
Yes.
So he kept his word?
Yes.
Did you believe, Mr. Menendez, as you were growing up, that your father was a person who would make good on his threats?
Oh, yes.
Now, did your father, in this particular conversation, after this episode, strike that. Your father said to you that if you scream again, he'll make sure he hits you hard enough that you won't be able to cry or scream again?
Yes.
And did he explain to you whose fault that would be?
Yes, he asked me whose fault it would be. He asked me if I understood, and I said yes. And he said, "So if I ever do that, do you understand whose fault it'll be, or do you know why it will happen?" And I said yes.
Okay. And what did you, whose fault would it be?
He made it very clear that it would be my fault, and I understood that it would.
What did you do, if anything, after this episode? Well, did your father leave after he had told you it would be your fault?
Yes, he left and he closed the door.
And when he told you this about whose fault it would be, what kind of mood was he in?
He was in a very stern, very serious, very strong mood.
And what did you do after he had left?
I sort of waited outside the door in my bedroom, listening to see where he had gone, and then just went to my bathroom and got in the tub.
Took a bath?
I took a hot bath and just promised myself to do whatever he wanted, never to scream, never to yell, never to cry. Just do what he wanted when it happened.
So next comes the next type of sex, which Eric came up with his name for, which was rough sex, which was between the ages of 13 and 15. This was the abuse that involved, like, tacks and needles and pins, right?
Yeah.
And did rough sex involve your father hurting you with things?
Yes.
And what kind of things was he hurting you with?
Needles, pins, tacks.
What was he doing with the rope. Needles? Excuse me?
Rope.
What was he doing with the needles and the pins and the tacks, generally?
He was sticking them into my thighs and my butt.
Was he doing anything to your penis?
Yes.
What was he doing?
Sometimes he'd be giving me oral sex, and sometimes he would have just tied up my penis.
I think it started as Jose telling Eric that it was like pain training, where he would stick the
Wasn't there an incident where Jose took Eric to, was it the dentist?
Yeah, the doctor.
Yeah, and he had been, I mean, he had to have an injection, and apparently he screamed when he had the injection. And so afterwards, Jose sort of introduced this to basically teach him to not feel pain.
Eric did say when he was talking about the rough sex that Jose would, like, bring candles into the room and, like, put them around the bed. I don't know. What do you make of that?
I really don't know. I remember in Park Dietz's, like, cross-examination in the second trial, that Eric had basically said to him during, like, his interview that he wasn't super comfortable talking at great length about rough sex because it was the aspect of the abuse that he's quite hazy on the details. Probably because it was so traumatic, I'm assuming, but...
Yeah.
I don't really know. I mean, did you have any thoughts about it?
About, like, the candles and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of wonder... I mean, I feel like it could be viewed either as, like, Jose trying to normalize it for Eric, or maybe, like, Jose trying to normalize it for himself? You know, I don't know. It's just so different than every other aspect of the sexual abuse that it's really confusing.
I mean, I thought about it this way. Like, if you were making up a story about abuse, wouldn't you put this thing about, like, the candles in the earlier stages? When your father is apparently being nice to you.
Right.
Like, it seems a bit, like, odd. If you were making up the story, why would you put this detail about the candles in with rough sex? You know?
Yeah.
I think it's one of the aspects where it seems so, like, out of place that it's just not the sort of thing that you would make up.
I mean, I think it's also sort of an indication of, like, Jose's sick mind. I mean, like, not only is he sticking his son with pins and tacks as he's, like, engaged in sexual acts with him, but he's, like, putting candles around the bed while he does it and, like, I don't know, it's just, ugh. there was a third type of sex that Eric called nice sex. And he said that the only reason he called it nice sex was because there was rough sex, which was the pins and needles and tacks. So,
Didn't Eric also say that he referred to it as nice sex because it was whenever Jose was in a good mood?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
So, this was the time during the 11 to 15 years and after that, which we'll get to, that Jose was not violent, wasn't angry at Eric, and he told Eric that he just wanted to relax. So that's what Eric referred to as nice sex.
Yeah.
So the fourth kind of sex was what Eric called sex, and that was anal penetration by Jose onto Eric.
Yeah.
So I think that Leslie Abramson, Eric's lawyer, gets criticized a lot for using the word sex to refer to Eric's sexual abuse. And I think it's important, an important point of clarification, that that's how Eric referred to it. By her, like, I don't view her saying that as like minimizing it in any way. I think it was her attempt to like use Eric's language.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with you there. I think Leslie gets a lot of flack for her, I don't know, her general demeanor and attitude. Not just when she's examining Eric, but just when she's doing her job in general. And I mean, with certain aspects of Eric's testimony, I can understand why people would criticize her for the way she examines Eric, but I think people have to remember that she had a really tough job, because in a lot of Eric's testimony, he sort of goes off script. And I'm not saying it's necessarily a script, but obviously clients are prepared for their testimony, so they obviously know what they're going to, what they have to talk about during their testimony at certain points. And a lot of the time, Eric just sort of wanders off and gives answers that Leslie clearly doesn't necessarily want. And she gets caught like leading him a lot. And you can hear in her voice, she does get a little bit irritated at times with him. But I don't think it's necessarily her being like inconsiderate of Eric's trauma. I just think she was trying to do the best job possible for him.
And I mean, the fact that he like goes off script or wanders away from her question, but still doesn't give any indication that he's lying, I think speaks to credibility too. Like, she hasn't even asked him about this incident and he's just talking. Also, he was on a very high dose of Xanax at the time, which is an anti-anxiety medication. And it made him, like, really spacey. So I think she was, like, trying to manage that while also working within the restrictions of a courtroom and what kinds of questions you're allowed to ask a witness, while also trying to present Eric in the best light to the jury. I mean, I give her a lot of credit for that. It's a tough job.
So in terms of Eric's credibility, one thing that I think doesn't really get spoken about that much, although I have seen some people bring it up, is the fact that Eric, during his testimony, aside from the start, and like one or two moments in between is not devoid of emotion, but he's pretty straight to the point, matter of fact. He doesn't get highly emotional. He doesn't really cry. There are moments when you can see that he, like, there are tears welling up, but he fights himself and he tries his hardest to not cry.
The only time that he seriously breaks down is really one of Leslie's first questions to him, which is the clip that I put in the beginning. I can't remember another time that he cries.
I just feel like that sort of counters the whole argument that he was acting the entire time, because if he's talking about all these traumatic things, if he was acting, why wouldn't he play up the whole, oh my god, it was so traumatic, and I'm sobbing and crying because it was so traumatic and bad. Like, I just feel like it kind of defeats that entire argument, and especially compared to Lyle as well, because Lyle was very emotional on the stand, especially compared to Eric. So I feel like when you look at Lyle and then compare it to Eric, you can't then say that Eric is acting. That's how I see it anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like especially with the, like, each comparing each brother's testimony about the sexual abuse, like, you would think that Eric, who was abused for 6 times as long as Lyle was, would be the more emotional, like, crying, clearly, like, traumatized, visibly upset. Even from, like, even if you didn't think he was acting, like, that's kind of what you would expect. But then for him to be so stoic and just, like, a complete, really, like, a complete blank slate when he's talking about these horrible things that happened to him. Like you said, it, like, defeats the whole argument that he was, like, trying to be convincing as, like, a crying emotional mess, you know?
And, I mean, he was on Xanax at the time. So, I mean, and that does explain some of his behavior. But even still, if he was acting, wouldn't he be trying to, like, play up the whole traumatic side of his experiences? Those are the questions that I sort of think about, and I don't know. I think it just completely counters the argument that he's acting in his testimony.
I mean, the way I view it, like, if he's acting, he's doing an awful job.
Yeah. And I mean, for anyone who knows a bit about, like, incest and rape and how some survivors deal with talking about traumatic events, it's consistent, because there often is no affect when survivors are talking about these traumatic experiences, because they sort of cut themselves off emotionally. But for someone who doesn't know about these sorts of issues, like, the average person is more likely to think, wait, why is he not, like, crying or sobbing or incredibly upset when he's talking about these horrific experiences?
I think in Eric Tells All, he says that he was basically, like, just blanking out on the stand because he was so overwhelmed with, like, anxiety of being up there and the trauma of recalling these things. And I think you can really tell that in the way that he's behaving on the stand. Okay, so that about covers the actual, like, incidents from ages 11 to 15. There were a couple other things that happened during this time that were related, though. So, at around the age of 12, Eric tried to run away. And there is corroboration for this because his cousin Diane was living in the house at the time, and she remembers this. Well, she remembers Eric trying to run away. So At the time, they lived in Pennington, New Jersey, and they lived on a lake. So Eric took the family's boat, went across the lake, and then got lost in the woods on the other side of the lake.
Did you get away?
I got away for the all afternoon until nighttime, when it started to get real dark, and there was a forest across the across the lake, and it was a real heavy, dense forest, and you could get lost, and I did.
And did somebody find you in the forest?
Yes, I heard my father calling after me.
And did he find you?
Yeah, I called after him.
Why'd you do that if you were trying to run away?
At that point, I was much more scared of being in the forest at night than running away.
I mean, do you think that has to do with, like, trauma bonding? Even if you're being abused by your parent, like, you still have an innate bond with them?
Yeah, I guess as, like, Eric called out to him because he was scared of being in the woods alone, and, like, that's what you do if you're scared, right? You, like, call out to the person who's trying to come find you.
Yeah.
Even though that's the person you're trying to run away from.
And what happened? Did your father eventually come upon you?
Yes.
And what was his reaction?
He was furious.
And did he do anything to you?
Yes, he picked me up. I was sitting on the back of a tree. Well, my back was to the tree, and I was sitting on the ground of it. And he picked me up and threw me against the tree and said, "If you ever run away, I'll kill you. Do you understand me? You'll never get away." And he just went on and on and on about how this was stupid and how this was ridiculous and how I was embarrassing him. And
embarrassing him to whom?
Diane Vandermolen was in the house at the time, and he was more embarrassed that I had done this and Diane would now realize that I tried to get away from the house than anything else.
I think Jose's comment is really, I think it's really indicative of, like, how trapped Eric was. Like, I don't know, that's something that, like, kidnappers tell their victims, you know? Like, you're never going to get away from me.
I mean, Eric was basically captive.
So then after he tried to run away, and that didn't work, Eric thought about killing himself, but he, like, couldn't bring himself to do it. So then he decided to try to resist. The first thing he did was he put cinnamon in Jose's drinks, because he had friends at school who talked about sex. This was in seventh grade, so Eric was around 13. And his friends at school said that cinnamon made semen taste better. So that was why Eric put cinnamon in Jose's drinks.
It is the sort of thing where, like, you can imagine, like, a kid hearing that. And it's the sort of, like, dumb rumor that kids that age would spread. You know?
Yeah.
And you can imagine someone in Eric's position would hear that, and at that age, would probably believe it. Yeah. I mean, isn't this also around the age where, when Eric's friends would talk about sex, he would, like, become really uncomfortable and try and not talk to them as much, because he thought that if he said anything, they would realize that he was having sex with his father, because he was worried that they would realize that he knew too much. I think he describes it something like that.
Right. Yeah.
This also ties in with the Eric testified that he would basically use lemon on all of his food at this time, and his mum basically just bought, like, a bunch of lemons. And this is also corroborated by their Aunt Marta, who remembers seeing Eric, like, just drown his food in lemon, and apparently other family members noticed this as well. And it was like a it was like an inside joke in the family about how Eric would just use lemon on all his food. But I guess none of those family members, or clearly none of those family members, knew why.
He said that he put the lemon, a lot of lemon, on his food because he had heard that it made it so that you wouldn't taste as much. And he did it so that it would, like, dull the taste of his father's semen.
That's so messed up, because you can imagine, like, these family members think it's funny. And to them, it's just like a innocent, funny thing that this, like peculiar kid does. But then to find out years later why he was doing that, it's fucked.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like what we said in our last video about Lyle. Like, all of these people saw, all of their family members saw these things that were going on, but never connected them. The other thing was that during this time period, Eric referred to himself as Hurt Man, and that was connected to the rough sex. And this is corroborated by Andy.
Were you familiar with a nickname that your cousin Eric used to refer to himself at about this same time?
Yes, I did.
And what was that nickname?
It was Hurt Man.
I think he referred to himself as Hurt Man within his circle of friends as well. But to them, it was just like a nickname that he came up with, and not, well, I mean, clearly that's all they would think about it. So wasn't it around the time of Rough Sex where Kitty had basically started checking Eric out, where she would basically ask, like, look at his genitals and then would, like, pop blisters, I think? Right?
Yeah.
And I think some people think that, like, the blisters or whatever were being caused by the, like, the sex with, like, the rope, because didn't Eric say that, like, his dad would, like, tied his penis up with a rope or something, right?
Yeah, during the rough sex.
Yeah, so there's that. But there's also the theory that Kitty was checking Eric out because Kitty was worried that, since she was aware that Jose was probably having affairs at the time, or seeing, like, prostitutes, that Jose would have given Eric an STI. Which I think it's plausible.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is just, like, speaks to Kitty clearly knowing that something was going on. I do wonder, like, do you think she knew the extent of it?
That's hard to tell, you know. I think she probably did know the extent of it, but she just chose to ignore it.
Do you want to move into corroboration for this time period? I think there's two main things that are strong corroboration for the sexual abuse happening from ages 11 to 15, and also the violent components of it. So the first one is Eric disclosing to Andy. Do you want to describe a little bit about Eric and Andy's relationship and how that happened?
So Andy Cano is the son of Martha Cano, who is the aunt of both Eric and Lyle. So that would make him the cousin of Eric and Lyle. And Eric, aside from Lyle, he probably was the closest person to Eric. Eric became closer with Andy once Lyle began dating Stacy. And since Lyle was spending all his time with Stacy, that left Eric sort of alone a lot. But then during this time that he became closer with Andy, this is also around the age typically when abused children start to think that maybe like what's happening to them isn't right or isn't normal. So there was one incident where Eric and Andy were playing. They were like playing outside and they were pretending that like someone was chasing them in a helicopter, right?
Yeah.
And anyway, during this play, they eventually like hide behind a tree, or like they went through somewhere. And once they began talking, Eric asked Andy.
He asked me if my dad ever gave me massages.
And did you understand at that point what he meant?
No, I didn't.
And do you recall basically what your response to him was?
Well, at that point, I got the feeling, sure he let me know this, but he was actually trying to find out if any of these massages were normal. And my response to him was that I wouldn't know. I didn't have a father around. My parents were divorced then. And I really couldn't help him.
Let me ask you this. He asked you whether your father gave you massages?
That's right.
You said he was trying to find out if it was normal. Was there something else he told you about the massages? Like where they were?
Yes, he did.
Okay. What did he say about where the massages were?
Well, he told me his father was massaging his dick.
He used that word?
Yes, he did.
Now, the other part of the initial conversation in the woods was Andy asked Eric, or said that he would ask his mother if, like, a father giving his son massages on his penis was normal. And Eric said, like, no, don't do that. You can't tell anyone about this.
Okay. And what else is said, as best you can remember, in the course of this particular conversation?
Well, what I do remember very specifically was him asking me to make a promise to him never to reveal that to anybody. And he was saying it very seriously, and I took it very seriously.
Had you suggested at any point in the conversation revealing it to someone or telling someone or asking someone about it?
Well, at that point, I was wondering myself, and I really wanted to ask my mother if that was normal.
Did you mention that to Eric?
Yes, I did.
And was it after that he made you promise?
I don't remember. It was probably after that, yes.
Yeah. And they pinky swore, right?
Yeah. When was it that Eric made the comment to Andy that the massages were beginning to hurt?
It was a couple months after the initial Eric asking if the massages were normal.
Now, do you recall a subsequent occasion, another occasion when this topic was being discussed between you and Eric, where he gave you some additional information about what was going on?
Yes.
And can you recall that, tell us what you can remember of that conversation?
What I can remember of that conversation is very little, but I do remember very well that he explained to me that these massages that his father was giving him were beginning to hurt.
And do you remember whether or not you understood what that meant? Or
I definitely didn't understand.
And do you recall whether or not you tried to gather any information about why massages were hurting?
I would imagine I did, but I don't remember.
Okay. Did you ask Eric straight out, why does it hurt, or how does it hurt, or what is he doing that's making you hurt?
If I did, I don't remember.
And you don't remember his ever elaborating on it?
No.
He didn't tell you anything about tacks or needles or ropes or anything like that?
No, he didn't.
So, it was like a month or two later, I think, and Andy was over at Eric's house, and they were in Eric's room.
Yeah, they had been playing outside, and Andy had, I think, cut his knee or his leg on, like, a branch.
I got scratched on a log or on a branch or something. My leg did.
Okay. So what did you do about that?
Well, I wiped it off, but when we went back to his room, I remember seeing a jar of Vaseline. What I didn't know what it was used for or what it was then, but I figured it was a type of ointment that you put on scratches and so on.
Okay, so did you try to use it for your scratch?
I picked it up, and Eric immediately told me to put it back down.
Okay, did he say anything else about it?
No, he didn't. He just said, don't touch it.
Well, did you explain why you wanted to use it?
Yes, I told him I was just going to put it on my scratch.
And did he tell you anything about that?
Yeah, he said that's not what it's for.
Up until August of 1989... Eric thought that the only person that knew about the molestation was Andy.
Yeah. And I mean, that would, I mean, his, hasn't Marta has talked about how didn't, like, Andy felt a lot of guilt because he wished that he would have said something earlier.
Yeah.
I don't, like, I've seen some people say, like, oh, why didn't Andy say anything? And I'm a bit like, he was, what, 3 years younger than Eric, right?
Yeah.
Like, he was a kid. Like, what was he supposed to do with that information, especially after Eric had sworn him to secrecy?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't think you can expect someone, like, at that age, in that position, to know what to do.
Plus, I don't think Andy really understood what Eric was telling him. I mean, that's about it for that time period. Oof.
Did we mention the teachers and coaches' observations?
Oh, yeah. Did you want to talk about that?
Yeah. So, one other thing that corroborates the sexual abuse around this time period in regards to Eric, but this is something they also noticed with Lyle, but I think more so with Eric. Essentially, all of Eric's teachers and coaches noticed his frequent dissociating. So he would just completely blank out in the middle of class. Sometimes his coaches would be in the middle of a conversation with him and he would just, like, just doze off in the middle of the conversation, and they would notice that he would just go completely blank in his face as if he was just thinking of something else in the middle of his conversations with these people. And I think in Eric's testimony, he said that he would always be, like, just randomly at any point in the day, he could just think back to the abuse, essentially. And it would just pop into his mind and he would start to sort of, like, well, dissociate. And this is a behavior, yeah, where, like, it was noticed so much and, the like, Eric did it so frequently that all of his teachers and coaches noticed that, and I think it's pretty significant.
Yeah.
Because everyone does dissociate from time to time. It's when you sort of, like, you wander off for a second, but then you catch yourself. But the average person doesn't really do it that much. But if you're doing it so much to the point where all of these adults in your life are noticing that you're doing it frequently, I think it's a pretty good sign that there's something wrong. Oh, yeah, and there's that news article about Jose's treatment of prostitutes.
Yeah. So there was a news article that came out towards the end of the first trial where a madam who supplied Jose with prostitutes, said that he was sadistic and that he treated her girls like really violently during their sexual encounters, and that she actually like stopped supplying him with prostitutes once one of her girls came back like covered in bruises. Oh, and didn't the article also say that he always asked for like 13-year-old girls?
Yeah. So they, I mean, they obviously couldn't do that, so, but they sent him girls that just looked younger.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this was never brought into the trial, but I don't know. Do you think she was lying?
I don't know. Like, what reason would she have to lie? Because at the time, it was like kind of like the unpopular thing to say that you believe the brothers.
Yeah, and I mean, she straight up says in that article, like, not only did she believe they were sexually abused, but that, like, they had a right to be afraid of him, basically. I mean, the first line of this article says, if Jose Menendez treated his two sons the way he supposedly treated the call girls sent to him by Hollywood madam Sherry Woods, the boys' claim of self-defense in their riveting Los Angeles murder trial might have merit. I mean, I don't know. That's a pretty corroborating statement, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, Jose was, like, violent and, well, not physically violent, but like, aggressive and intimidating to everyone in his life. So I feel like, I think it says a lot that even people who knew him in a work environment or had like very limited interactions with him, like knew that this was, I don't know, like someone you didn't want to mess with, someone who was like powerful and physically aggressive and abusive and like
made grown men cry.
Yeah. I guess I just feel like when you have someone who acts that way in public, it's really not that surprising that he was so much worse in private.
Yeah, I fully agree with you there. I mean, it's something that Leslie talks about in her closing argument, is that
intimidating, by far the most frequently used word. Intimidating to adults, intimidating to people at work, intimidating to teachers, intimidating to coaches, intimidating to his friends. What do you think he's like to a 2-year-old or a 5-year-old or a 9-year-old or an 18-year-old who has always been under his thumb? He is terrifying to that person.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, it's true.
Thanks for listening to the first half of this episode. Please check out the second half to hear the rest.